everybody, Bill Buckmaster, along with my friend Ray Allen, Ray engineering and producing the show. Had a little bit of rain during the night. I did not hear it. I was pretty much out cold after after my dental work yesterday. So, it was nice to wake up to that wonderful smell of the desert. It is Tuesday, March 28th, 2017. Hope you're having a good day. We're from AM 1030 KVOI. Got our live streaming at buckmastershow.com and KVOI.com. Our live line number is 790-2040. If there is any time during the hour that you would like to contribute to the program, we would love to hear from you. Well, there has been a massive drop in tax enforcement in the state of Arizona, and it's costing the state big money, $70 million or more annually. That is according to Elliot Hibbs. Mr. Hibbs, the former director of the Arizona Department of Revenue, he is a current board member for the Grand Canyon Institute, a Phoenix-based independent centrist think tank. He is also the principal author of the Grand Canyon policy paper entitled Enhanced Revenue Enforcement Creates Fairness and Raises Millions in Revenue. Let's go on the live line. Mr. Hibbs, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bill. Thank you for having me.
So we're losing a lot of money, aren't we?
Yeah, I believe we are. Clearly. And I think when you go back, the Auditor General said it so well back in 2005 in one of its auditor performance reports, that auditing is a critical function because the state depends on taxpayers to voluntarily report and remit taxes timely, and therefore auditing is used not to educate taxpayers as well as to discover and correct differences between taxpayer obligations and what they report and pay. So auditing serves to encourage voluntary compliance as well as gaining additional revenue for the state from those that are not paying.
How understaffed are we?
Well, in when doing the report and going back and looking at some numbers, for example, I left the department in 2005, and we had 296 people in the audit division. The numbers that I have for today suggest there's about 114. So we've lost 182 positions in the audit area alone. And when you look at the collection side, which is another good enforcement area for the agency in collecting unpaid taxes, we had 212 back in 2005, and they're down to only 88 today.
So this was to save money, but in the end, it's costing us money.
Well, my experience, again, over the 9 years that I was director of revenue here in Arizona, there were a number of times that we were asked to assist when the economy went bad because we found that an auditor and a collector and a licensing enforcement person could bring in, at the very minimum, $4 for every dollar spent. But in most cases, and that was for individual income tax, for most cases, it was $10 to $25 for each dollar that's invested in those enforcement programs. So when we cut those programs out, we are really losing $10 to $25 for every dollar of reduction that's made.
And the governor said today, well, he actually told the Capital Times yesterday that he's looking at hiring 100 new jobs, but I don't know specifically how many of those would go to the state revenue department. 25 of the jobs would go to the Department of Child Services. So do you have any insight into that, or how many are, jobs are is he thinking of filling?
You know, I don't know. I did have a conversation with a department staff member just a week or so ago. There was no mention at that time of any additional staff being allocated to the department. I certainly encourage them to develop a program such as I talked about in the paper where, again, an investment of $9 million could bring in at least $70 million the first year for funding of essential state programs and $100 million or more in subsequent years, but I have no indication that there's any effort to do that right now.
And how did all this begin? You say going back to your time, you were fully staffed, and this began as an effort just to basically cut a few jobs and save some money. Is that it or what?
Well, that's what it appears to me. I mean, obviously, we had some real tough times here in Arizona where we were $1.5 billion in the hole. And one of the ways to obviously help that situation is to reduce expenditures in government. And there certainly have been efficiencies that have been done in the department both during my time and I think since then, where there perhaps could have been some reduction in monies. But the other side of it is, if you're going to do reductions, you don't want to cut staffing and programs that are more than paying for themselves. Again, $10, $20 for every dollar that's spent. Instead, you really should be investing even more money in those programs.
You've been looking at the return filings, and there are a lot of individual tax return errors, aren't there?
Yeah, I mean, and I don't know what it is today. Again, I haven't been there for 12 years or so, but back in my time, even with electronic filing, we found that there were substantial errors that were being made in the individual income tax area, as well as in all the other taxes as well. And so, again, without a vigorous audit program to go out and determine whether those deductions and credits and everything are appropriate, the state is losing money. And then other taxpayers who are voluntarily paying their taxes are having to shoulder a bigger share of the burden to provide for those essential services. And I think everybody in this state would love to see more money for education. And clearly one of the ways that they could address that issue is by adding staff to the Department of Revenue and then tracking how much money those additional people bring in and allocating that directly toward education, just as one example.
That just seems like a no-brainer to put fully staff the Department of Revenue. I understand we have a very complex tax code here in Arizona compared to other states. Is that true, Mr. Hibbs?
Oh, very definitely. Again, if you go and look at all the tax areas, whether it's individual income tax, the corporate income tax with various ways that corporations can file and they get to choose which one they want to do, to the transaction privilege tax, which has many different categories of taxation and again, exemptions and deductions. And it's often hard for people to even understand exactly what is owed. And that's what the importance of an audit program is from an education side as well as from an enforcement side. So, again, it just makes sense to invest more and to help taxpayers who really want to comply to be able to do so.
Who was the governor when you were serving as director?
Well, I came in under Bruce Babbitt in 1980, and then I also served under Janet Napolitano in 2003 through part of 2005.
All right, Elliot Hibbs, thank you very much, sir, for spending some time with us.
My pleasure, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot. Elliot Hibbs, he is the former director of the Arizona Department of Revenue. He now has been contributing to the nonprofit independent centrist think tank, which is based in Phoenix. It's called the Grand Canyon Institute. This portion of the Buckmaster Show presented by our friends over in Silver City, where they are getting ready for Memorial Day because they have their very big event coming up with the Jazz Festival, the 22nd annual Silver City Blues Festival. And the headliner there will be Ghost Town Blues Band from Memphis. They've got a great lineup of entertainers. It's a free event. Only a three-hour drive over to Silver City, so check it out. Go to southwestnewmexico.org for the full listing of the many things to do and the great places to stay. We'll be right back with Shelley Fishman.
American Openings is pleased to sponsor Hands of Hope. Hands of Hope believes every life matters, and they're committed to walking alongside women to provide confidential, non-judgmental care so they can make the best decisions when unsure about continuing with a pregnancy. You can learn more about Hands of Hope at GiveHopeTucson.com. American Openings is a locally owned door and window manufacturer and is blessed to be a sponsor of a local ministry doing so much to protect life.
The excitement is building for the grand opening in early 2017 for the Twisted Tandoor. The legendary Indian food truck will now have a permanent brick-and-mortar home at Swan and Camp Lowell Drive. The menu will be an expansion of the Indian classic offerings from the original Twisted Tandoor food truck. The Twisted Tandoor, coming in early 2017 at 4660 East Camp Lowell Drive.
Traveling is more than just the flight. It's the whole experience. In money saved, in time saved. And with almost 60 flights a day taking off from Tucson International Airport nonstop to San Diego, Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Oakland, San Francisco, Salt Lake City, Denver, Portland, Seattle, Dallas, Houston, Minneapolis, Chicago, Atlanta, New York, and easy one-stop connections to hundreds of destinations around the world, you can get there from here. Travel smart. Travel TUS and flytucson.com. It's the way to go.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The Regional Transportation Authority and its members are working together to deliver transportation improvements to our region. More than 770 improvements have been completed to date. The success of the RTA is built upon collaboration and leadership that focuses on addressing our regional mobility needs to make our region a safer, more efficient, and more vibrant place to live. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com.
Today, more than ever, consumers want to work with the businesses they trust. At BBB, we also want to honor their efforts for doing business the right way. Hi, this is Suzanne Miller with your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, reminding you that our annual Torch Awards are happening on Friday, April 7th at 5:30 p.m. at Casino del Sol. It will be a fun, elegant evening of celebration, and we hope you will join us. Register today at tucson.bbb.org. Thanks for doing business the right way, Southern Arizona.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. Coming up Wednesday at noon, we'll talk with the sheriffs of Santa Cruz County and Pima County about border enforcement. Also, Kelly Ward, United States Senate hopeful. She'll be running against Senator Jeff Flake. Buckmaster, noon to 1 on AM 1030, KVOI, Tucson's voice.
Shelley Fishman is a certified financial planner professional. The opinions voiced in this program segment are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing.
It's easy enough for us because the man that I consult with is seated with me every Tuesday at about 12:20. Shelley Fishman, Certified Financial Planner. Hey, Shell, how are you?
I am well today. I think I'm doing a little bit better than you, Bill.
Yeah, it was a
bad experience
when you've still got wisdom teeth and one of them needs a filling. That is a kind of a recipe for disaster. It's a very difficult kind of thing to do, but we push on. As my friend Ray Allen knows, the show goes on.
Well, your pain is the market's gain today.
Is that the deal?
That's okay. The deal. It's Tuesday, but the market's up 150.
So when I'm in a lot of pain, the market goes the other way, which is wonderful.
We're
going
to have to work on that.
Everybody else. We are. You know, we were looking at if things had not gone the right way on the street today, we were looking at pretty much 8 straight down sessions, and you'd have to go back to the Carter administration to have a bad stretch like that.
Right, but yeah. that's the importance of context.
Mm-hmm.
We are still up massively since the election, and even with 8 straight down sessions and one fairly significant down session, we're still up significantly. So right now we're at around 20,700. On the Dow, had we not been up the 150 points today, it still is a pretty good run since the beginning of November.
David Brooks had an interesting piece. I think it's in today's New York Times.
It is.
And he's talking about the whole world in the financial world of this emphasis on income as opposed to consumption when we start talking about taxes.
Right. And this is, of course,
which fits in nice with our first segment.
Exactly.
About lack of enforcement costing Arizona big money.
Right. Well, I think what motivated David Brooks's article today was the propensity or willingness or desire on the part of the administration to get past the mess that was the Affordable Care Act reform and get on to something else. And that something else appears to be the next one on their agenda is to do tax reform. And if you thought health care was complex, tax reform, as David Brooks points out, for everything you try to do, you have an entire lettered street in Washington that has a stake in the outcome.
But it kind of was set up that some of the criticism about Mr. Trump going after the health care issue first was some have said he should have gone after the taxes first because it would be easier. But from what I'm hearing from you is this is not an overnight fix.
Well, we haven't had a major revision to the tax code since about 1986. We've had tax increases and tax reductions, but we haven't had a major overhaul. And so and I must point out, David Brooks, when I was growing up, David Brooks was considered a fairly, you know, right of center, conservative Republican columnist.
Oh, yeah.
Now, as the Republican Party has moved further and further right, Brooks has seemed to be more and more centrist.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember him as pretty conservative, and I think he would think of himself that way. What he points out is that what happened in the 1980s with President Reagan was what we tried to do is bring the income tax structure more into line with theories that said as you reduce income taxes, especially at the upper middle and at the top, that's going to create incentives for investment in the economy, and that will create actually higher tax revenues, but more importantly, a stimulative effect on the economy. Now, you can argue whether that worked or not, but as Reagan's budget director will tell you today, and as Dr. Laffer will tell you, because he's kind of the originator of this Laffer curve theory that more is less, or what H.W. Bush called voodoo economics,
mm-hmm.
The idea that if you lower taxes, you will create higher revenues because of the stimulative effect on the economy. Now, what Reagan was doing was taking tax rates that hadn't been touched since the early 60s and bringing them down. So the higher tax rate at the time was like 74%. And so by bringing them down into the mid-40s, that was a very, very significant reduction. And that poured a lot of revenue or a lot of stimulus into the economy.
Mm-hmm.
That combined with increased defense spending really did create in the last few years of the Reagan administration some very good results.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Dr. Laffer today will tell you that if you're tweaking that from 38% down to 34 or something like that, you're not going to have a very big effect. But putting that aside for a second, it's the whole orientation, the context, that where you should be concentrating your efforts is on the income side of the equation. Whereas the rest of the industrialized world, as David Brooks points out, have shifted their emphasis to the spending part of the equation.
The consumption side. Yeah.
And so what they're saying is you can't really affect the income side too much more. Now, you might mm-hmm. be able to do it on the business side. In other words, reduce the nominal tax rate from 35% to businesses to something lower than that. We've heard 15%, 20%, 25%. But what you really want to do is begin to tax the spending or to tax consumption rather than income. Because if you tax income, it has the effect of being destimulative. That is, what you're doing is you're saying to people, you're giving them a disincentive for reinvesting. Okay, now that's the theory. And that's what, for instance, most European countries do with what's called a value-added tax.
The VAT.
Mm-hmm. If you, in fact, can lower the tax rates on business and close the loopholes, and David Brooks is somewhat skeptical about whether or not you can do that, because for every loophole, there is a ton of lobbying that wants to protect that loophole. But if you can just change the emphasis, you get some coincidence or overlap between what the Democrats would like to see happen and what the Republicans would like to see happen. And that kind of compromise and that kind of commonality of interest is the way legislation can get passed, because you have to kind of discard the high bid and the low bid. You discard the far right and the far left, and you find commonality in the middle. Now, you and I have talked about the so-called border adjustment tax, mm-hmm. which would in fact be a consumption tax on imported goods. But what Brooks is saying is, you know, if you only do it on imported goods, then what you probably will create is a trade war, and that's not a good thing. But if you can put a consumption tax of some type on everything we consume, and this is critical if you're going to get the Democrats on board, if you can make sure that it's not too regressive, because remember, if you're putting a tax on everything that people buy, the people who use most of their income to buy stuff are going to be more drastically affected by what you've done than people who have a lot of discretionary income and they don't spend it all. They invest a bunch of it. So there are clearly difficulties with making this work. But Brooks, again, as a centrist or a center-right thinker in this, is saying this gives us the opportunity, and this will give the Trump administration the opportunity to work with Democrats to put together some tax reform that could get passed with not only a majority of Republican support, but where you don't get the far right-wing Republicans mm-hmm. and the mm-hmm. far left-wing Democrats, with the combination of Republicans and Democrats working together, you could get some real meaningful change that would have the effect of changing our orientation from the income side to the consumption side in figuring out how to adjust our tax system such as it makes it simpler, number one, very important, and number two, it can be stimulative to the economy and be revenue neutral, because clearly you don't want to create a situation where you're creating larger deficits. So there are ways of doing this, and if to the extent that David Brooks is a spokesman for the centrist parts of the Republican Party who are going to drive policy. This is a very interesting approach and one that I think the investment community will see very positively. In fact, I think some of the reaction in the market today is positive, not because of what David Brooks wrote, but because some people kind of figuring that out and figuring that we can do tax reform. And if we do it the right way, it will get a bipartisan support and create stimulation in the economy, which will begin again to fulfill the promises that have created this rally over the past 3 months.
All righty, Shelley Fishman, thank you very much. Have a great rest of the week.
And feel better, Bill.
I will. Shelley Fishman, go to buckmastershow.com for a link to Mr. Fishman. We'll be right back.
The opinions voiced in this program segment are for general information only and are not necessarily those of LPL Financial or this station. Shelley Fishman, CFP, is an LPL Financial Planner. Shelley can be reached at 520-940-0884 or at his website, shelleyfishman.com. Securities offered through LPL Financial. Member FINRA, SIPC.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. On a changing planet, the University of Arizona's Biosphere 2 has been diving deeper and looking closer while energizing, innovating, conserving, and advancing science on an unparalleled scale to better understand the natural systems around us and to inspire our future generations. For 10 years now, UA Biosphere 2 has explored our planet's future. Come, explore it yourself. Open daily, biosphere2.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Welcome Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Well, more Americans are drinking wine than ever before, yet the rituals, customs, and language around the wine world remains very weird. As it's weird as ever, leaving many of us wondering, what is all the fuss about? A new book titled Cork Dork by award-winning journalist Bianca Abosker not only deeply investigates a cross-section of the wine world, but also chronicles Bianca's personal journey into her new life as a wine aficionado. Ms. Bosker joins us now on the live line from, I believe, New York City, or is it Washington? Bianca, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well.
I'm in Washington, D.C., actually.
All right. Ready for your first book signing, and you'll be out here in Arizona in a couple of days. So what is this fascination with wine all about, in your words?
Well, I can tell you what my fascination with wine is. I have to say, you know, the disclaimer is I started a total wine rube. I actually came to this adventure to train my senses and become a sommelier by way of being the tech editor at an online website. And I have to confess, I have a very similar question of, you know, why do otherwise rational people spend all this time and money on this thing that ultimately turns into very expensive pee? I had never actually, you know, wine for me was sort of like theoretical particle physics. It made me feel dumb, but I was more than happy to smile and nod for a little while. And I was okay not knowing too much until I discovered this world of cork dorks. I've always been obsessed with obsession, and no one does it like these sommeliers, these collectors, these scientists. And so I wanted to know, you know, could I have my spirit moved by a glass of grape juice? Could I decode these stories that emerged from tastes and smells the way they could? And it was just this other extreme from the sterility of being at a screen and covering tech that I found so compelling. So despite all my loved ones' warnings, I quit my job and started on this route that involved basically drinking wine from, you know, 9 a.m. in the morning on most weekdays and turning my life upside down for wine.
You know, is there a misconception about wine quality? In other words, is a $20 bottle of wine, can most people, Bianca, tell a difference between a $20 bottle and a $200 bottle of wine?
That's a great question. So I was really interested in this journey through wine. I think a lot of wine writing focuses on a very narrow band of it, right? It's the fine wines, it's the Michelin star restaurants. And yes, I wanted, you know, I went inside these high temples of wine connoisseurship, but I also really wanted to get into the low end. I mean, you know, the wines that most of us drink most of the time, and they're not the $500 bottles. I think what a lot of, one fascinating thing that I explored in my book that I think most people don't realize is that a lot of the wines that we drink are not just made with grape yeast and the love of this artistic winemaker, artisan, but are actually engineered almost like Doritos flavors or, you know, Swedish fish Oreos. You know, a lot of wines under $40 a bottle, but even some of the, you know, more expensive ones, are basically done by focus groups. You know, it's people who come in, they're consumers, and they say, hey, we, you know, this year we are into a blackberry taste. We want something a little more purple. And there's 62 different additives that can go into these wines to massage these flavors and manipulate them. And so can we taste the difference? Well, when you start to pay attention, you can definitely taste the difference. But, you know, flavor doesn't just come from taste. Flavor also comes from price, from the label, from the person that we're drinking it with. I mean, wine tastes a whole lot better when you're sitting across the table from someone you're in love with than it does when you're about to break up. So you can taste the difference. But, you know, flavor quality isn't this narrow thing that just exists in the bottle either.
I really enjoy the book. I'm right in the middle of it
Thank you.
And I love to travel. And you kind of also tell the history of some of the Sommeliers. They really originated, I guess, back, it goes all the way back to almost Egyptian times, doesn't it?
Right. Yeah. Oh, it's an ancient craft. And I think, you know, sommeliers haven't always had the best reputation.
I found that out while reading your book about some of the wild parties that they played they were actually key players in those parties.
Yes, well, they sometimes for better or for worse. I mean, the Romans had their version of sommeliers who satisfied not only the thirst for wine but also more carnal appetites, shall we say? But you know, I think there's this idea that the sommelier is being this, you know, kind of judgy undertaker of the restaurant, right, who stomps around in a suit and makes you feel bad. And I was just, that world has really changed. The people I met, whether they were in these Michelin star restaurants or, you know, out in Virginia Beach, I mean, they are proof that what most of us think we know about this world is wrong. And for a beverage that's all about pleasure, they subject themselves to a stunning amount of pain. And I know because I went through it. I mean, licking rocks to train your taste buds, you know, memorizing thousands of flashcards. They really are. I mean, I kind of think of them as like the gymnast, the Olympic gymnast of the dining room, right? Because they are so, it's this thing that looks easy, but only because that is the art, to make this difficult thing look effortlessly elegant.
We take the taste buds for granted, but with a little bit of nurturing, we can actually improve our taste, can't we?
Absolutely. And we're actually, I mean, at least when it comes to our sense of smell, we're better than we think we are. But you're right. When I started this, I thought, you know, maybe I don't appreciate these things because I just wasn't born able to, you know, with the mm-hmm. right genetic code to decode these tastes and smells. But it's not true. And you know, I was interested, yes, in the wine traditions, but also, you know, what can science teach us about these senses? And what I found is, you know, any of us can really hone our palates. It's something, you know, that also I found leads to great rewards, not just at the table, but way beyond it. I don't know, for me, I mean, I became aware of this sort of weird paradox, right, where we have become so focused on food, right, and chasing down food that tastes better, you mm-hmm. know, tasting menus, traveling, mm-hmm. farmers markets, ingredients, without ever really teaching ourselves to taste better. And we're missing a lot as a result. I mean, we, you know, for me, it's just this process of learning to decode and tune into these forgotten senses of taste and smell has just made me aware of this whole swath of information that most of us ignore. And beauty, I mean, really beauty that exists in places that we're not looking for it.
We're speaking with Bianca Bosker. She is the author of a terrific book. I'm enjoying it very much, called Cork Dork. Some tips, please, Bianca, some things I learned when you're presented with a wine list. Many of these lists are very extensive, almost look like an encyclopedia.
Right.
Yeah, there are what the industry calls kind of the gimme wine, stuff that people do recognize, the diner recognizes right away, but that may not be the best choice, certainly for the value, correct?
Yes. So one of the things I learned to do very quickly when I got a job as a cellar rat, which is really the lowest of the low in the wine world, was to decode the hidden language of wine lists. And you're right, most, if you're looking at this list of by the glass options, most wine lists have what sommeliers call gimme wines. Mm-hmm. And they're called that because most people see them, instantly recognize them, and say, give it to me, I don't care how much it costs. These are your California Cabernets, New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc. They're familiar. And if you order a gimme wine, you get hit with a gimme text. Because the idea is, these are wines where restaurants can make money on them because they know they're going to sell them. So in general, my first tip would be don't be embarrassed. Talk to the person who's there. They'll help you find an awesome line. Just admit to not knowing anything. Mm-hmm. That's how we all start learning. But if you really don't want to be have that conversation, try going for the thing that is most unfamiliar, you know, that comes from the region you can't pronounce, from the grape you've never heard of, because these sort of hidden gems are there because someone loved them. It's not easy for restaurants to make as much money on these wines, but they're there because someone really had a special spot in their heart for them.
Bianca, before I let you go, what's the hot region right now? Is it New Zealand still, the Marlborough region of New Zealand? Or what is the hot region?
Well, you know, I would say that there's, first of all, you're totally right that there are trends. I mean, in the same way that the fashion world goes through its colors, I think the wine world goes through these trends. The things are in and out, and they become uncool to order, which is a bit of a shame. I think there's some great kind of forgotten grapes. People don't think it's cool to order Chardonnay, but there are some delicious Chardonnays out there. I would actually say right now, a lot of excitement, not about a region, but about wines made out of Chenin Blanc, which is a white grape. You can find great examples from the Loire, for example, also South Africa. But it's to me, it always smells like a wet sheep holding a pineapple. And I mean that in the best way possible. It's delicious.
Bianca, thank you very much. We're going to tell people now about your event here in Arizona. Thank you, Bianca.
Thank you, and I can't wait to see you guys out there. I love it.
Thanks a lot. Bianca Bosker will be talking about and reading from her new book titled Cork Dork, published by Penguin Books. This Thursday evening, there'll be a book signing at the Changing Hands Bookstore, 300 West Camelback in Phoenix, 7 to 8:30. And again, that's Thursday night in Phoenix. Bianca sounds like a lot of fun and somebody great to talk to about her book, Cork Dork. I'm enjoying it very much. Be right back. Tucson now has its own Creole restaurant, capturing the spirit of New Orleans cuisine. Saz Creole Kitchen and Cocktails is located in St. Philip's Plaza at River and Campbell. The New Orleans-inspired menu includes a full range of gumbos and much-loved beignets. See you at Saz Creole Kitchen and Cocktails. Open daily, 8 a.m. to midnight at St. Philip's Plaza.
Traveling is more than just the flight. It's the whole experience. In money saved, in time saved. Almost 60 flights take off every day from Tucson International Airport and announcing the newest destination, New York.
American Airlines, now boarding nonstop to JFK.
Daily nonstop service to New York starts October 7th with connections across the Atlantic and throughout the Northeast. Now with 18 nonstop destinations from Tucson, you can get there from here. Travel smart. Travel T-U-S and flytucson.com. It's the way to go.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting from a different perspective. We bring you national stories ignored by the mainstream media. Sources include the Washington Times News Service, Personal Liberty Digest, the National Center for Policy Analysis, the Washington Free Beacon, and the Heartland Institute. It is national news coverage from a different perspective. The Southern Arizona News Examiner. Free subscriptions at soaznewsx.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority works with its member jurisdictions, the business community, project neighbors, and the broader community to deliver transportation projects promised in 2006. This collaborative effort is a model of diverse interests coming together for the benefit of the region. This spirit of regional collaboration helps us address the mobility and safety needs in all of our communities. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com.
Hi, this is Sean McCluskey, co-owner and designated broker for Rincon Ventures. If you're a rental owner by choice or by accident and you're looking to hire or change property management companies, consider Rincon Ventures. We employ an aggressive web-based advertising strategy to market your rental. We thoroughly screen prospective tenants and conduct routine property inspections. Our online system gives tenants the ability to pay rent and file maintenance requests instantly over the web. Our owners can use the same system to instantly check on their properties. Call Rincon Ventures at 881-2258 or visit us on the web at rvprop.com.
It's a land and cruise vacation sale at Bon Voyage Travel. Plan your dream vacation now and save big, up to 65%. Alaska, Hawaii, Europe, South America, the Caribbean. Pick your perfect destination. Bon Voyage Travel will create your exclusive getaway that includes extra perks and bonuses you won't find anywhere else. Call Bon Voyage Travel today or visit bvtravel.com.
On a changing planet, the University of Arizona's Biosphere 2 has been diving deeper and looking closer while energizing, innovating, conserving, and advancing science on an unparalleled scale to better understand the natural systems around us and to inspire our future generations. For 10 years now, UA Biosphere 2 has explored our planet's future. Come, explore it yourself. Open daily, biosphere2.org. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. Green Things is located at 3384 East River Road. There are free workshops. I want to tell you about them. Friday afternoon at 1 and Saturday morning at 10. Go to greenthingsaz.com for the latest on what the topics will be this weekend. Green Things, just west of the intersection of Dodge and River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. This afternoon at 4, Mike Check with Mike Shaw will be talking about schools. Vail School Superintendent Calvin Baker will be the guest, and many people point to that district as having lots of stability and a great leader at the helm. And I think that right now TUSD is hoping perhaps to find one of a leader of Mr. Baker's statue. Let's go now on the live line to the Buckmaster Show, contributor on education, Dr. Robert Hendricks, Professor Emeritus at the UA College of Education, and the former superintendent of the Flowing Wells School District, Dr. Hendricks, just back from a quick trip to Taipei, China. Hi, Bob. How are you?
I'm doing well. Recovering a little bit from some jet lag, but I'm doing fine. Thanks for asking.
And the trip went well over there, your speech?
Went extremely well. I've never been there before. I've done a lot of work in China, but never in Taipei, and wonderful country, and I would strongly recommend a visit.
You had a couple of recent op-eds, opinion pieces in the Arizona Daily Star talking about and using some of your experience to perhaps give some guidelines to the TUSD district, which right now, Dr. Hendricks, seems to have a leadership vacuum. Isn't that true?
It is, and they're going to have to right the sails, as they say, on the seas. You've got to make sure that they're moving forward, and I'm a little concerned. I'm hoping that there are good signals that they'll be appointing an interim superintendent, perhaps even tonight, but hopefully soon. I think they need to have someone that can at least move them forward, at least on a temporary basis, until they're able to establish a plan to select a permanent leader.
Boy, you've gone through this process all over the country. You've been a consultant. How does the TUSD process fit in the timing of a search for a new superintendent? Is this the time that districts typically look for a superintendent, right before the end of the school year?
Well, there are districts that are looking, but to be perfectly honest, Bill, I would be concerned that the window is closing. It's late in the spring. Most superintendents who either are securing contracts or have a contract will have made agreements for their next contract year, which typically begins in July. And so, you know, in terms of looking for a new leader, I wouldn't say that it's not possible, but I would say that it would be problematic at this point to begin a search. assuming that they would have a process together and could advertise and go through some of the other protocols that we typically use in a good solid search process, they probably wouldn't be able to begin identifying candidates until May. And I would say that's late.
Mm-hmm.
That's late.
Well,
again, not to suggest that it's not possible. I know that President Hicks had indicated in some of his comments that they might be looking more locally for someone, and that might change the game a little bit. But again, it's a difficult process because if superintendents have made a commitment for the coming year, one would wonder who they are if they're willing to break that commitment.
And then there's nothing that says they couldn't hire an interim, say, on a 12-month contract to see how it plays out, to kind of get their act together, give them some time, correct?
Absolutely. I think that is what I would see as the more probable scenario, is that an interim would be hired, someone that the board hopefully would be solidly behind, and that person would be in that chair possibly as long as next spring,
mm-hmm.
or possibly longer, to give the opportunity for the board to take a really strong look at the kind of leader that they want. And, of course, sometimes the interim, in fact, is the best possibility. Not to say that that would happen, but if they choose their interim carefully, maybe that's the person they want to put in that chair. But otherwise, they're going to have to look, and they need to look widely, and they need to look as some boards are doing now, in a little less conventional way, looking at people with an education background, and then maybe people who have strong business experience, but would defer to someone else in the organization for the curriculum expertise.
In your op-ed piece, the second of the two pieces, the observation you make that really jumps off the page at me is try to reach common ground. I think, Bob Hendricks, this is the most important thing that this board has to find. Somehow, they've got to get together and have a unanimous decision about who is going to lead the district.
I completely agree. I mean, the divisiveness of this board at this time, and I've made a study of a long study of boards and boards' behavior, and I've observed boards in many, many places, and boards can get along, and boards need to get along, and there needs to be some commonality in purpose, and however that brings them together, the divisiveness that we see right now in TUSD is simply not healthy for anyone.
And the board meetings, as you suggest, little less theater, perhaps a bit more professionalism.
I would hope so. I would hope so. Understand that every board member comes into the job with an agenda. And there are specific things that they would like to see. And sometimes those needs or those desires are fulfilled, and sometimes they're not. But the reality is that every board member, at least in the state of Arizona, is elected as a member at large. And so they have the responsibility as a member at large to serve the entire school district, not a specific population, not a specific region, not a specific neighborhood. They represent the entire school district. And so that focus on the entire community, they need to be mindful of that with everything that they do. And yes, maybe they have some specific interests, but we call those people Johnny One Notes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're board members that repeatedly talk about one single issue, and that is not healthy to a positive direction for a board. Every board member must embrace every responsibility that comes with being a board member.
All right. Dr. Robert Hendricks, recovering from a little bit of jet lag. What was the topic of your speech in Taipei?
Talking about higher level thinking skills. And in fact, in my experiences in mainland China and in Hong Kong, I was a bit surprised that the Taiwanese are far more advanced in that area. They have an outstanding education system.
Okay.
And hopefully we could do some things to help them along even further.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Robert Hendricks. Thanks, Bob.
Okay. Bye.
Dr. Hendricks named Arizona's top school superintendent in 1989. He's one of our 24 contributors to the Buckmaster Show. Coming up tomorrow, we talked a little bit about Mic Check with Mike Shaw. That's at 4. More about education then. Tomorrow morning, Wake Up Tucson from 6 to 9. Talking Culture comes on from 9 to 10. And then me, Bill Buckmaster. Is it the midweek edition already? Yeah, tomorrow. We'll have the sheriffs of Pima and Santa Cruz County. Should be great tomorrow, talking about the border. Back after a break, and then Michael Medved. Have a great afternoon.